You're listening to Nick Luck Daily, bringing you the latest news and the best interviews from around the world of horse racing. This episode is brought to you by the Racehorse Owners Association, by Thoroughbred Racing Commentary's global rankings in partnership with the Saudi Cup, and by the Fitzdares Club.
Hello and welcome to Nick Luck Daily, the show that brings you the latest news and the sharpest insight from around the racing world. I'm Tom Stanley, in again for Nick Luck, who's off to Bahrain for the Bahrain International Trophy. It is Monday the 16th of November, and we enjoyed an excellent extended weekend of National Hunt racing, but it was a weekend which was marred with its fair bit of controversy. On Thursday at Taunton, Alexander Thorne failed to weigh in, having won the race, much of that due to the changes to the routes brought about by COVID protocols. Saturday afternoon, once again in the mare's bumper, saw a photo which, well, frankly, couldn't really be seen due to the darkness. And then yesterday at Fontwell, the final race, the mare's handicap hurdle, 7 of the 8 runners were disqualified for failing to take the proper course. And all these National Hunt faux pas and embarrassments begs the question, Dave Yates, newsboy of the Daily Mirror, is horse racing stuck in the dark ages?
No, it's not, Tom. And I'm going to try and explain why. Let's deal, shall we, with the photo finish equipment first and the photo that happened on Saturday. I'm indebted in discussing this to Dan Abraham, of course, award-winning photographer from the Racing Press Room, and also Marcus Townend, Captain Heath of the Daily Mail, also an award winner, as it happens. Now, I discussed this with Dan. Dan said a couple of things that illuminated the issue for me, if you will. The first is that the camera that's used, whilst it's a high-tech digital camera, it's not quite the same as the camera that professional photographers use. You can't use light intensifiers with that camera. If you've been watching that race on racing TV on Saturday, you'd have thought, well, what's the problem here? That, you know, it's perfectly light at Cheltenham. But for those of us who were actually there, I think that's as dark as I've ever known it for a race. And the standard setter of the year is normally the final race at Ascot on the Saturday before Christmas. But it was really, really dark at Cheltenham on Saturday. So they can't use light intensifiers. There are two things that you can do. You can either flood the winning line with lights, which can create its own problems because horses are running from darkness into light, and that could create safety issues. They run from light into stronger light at Sandown Park on the all-weather. If during the evening, the whole course is floodlit, and then the winning line has brighter light on it. But the horses aren't running from one to the other. They're merely running through degrees of light, if you like. So you could do that. That would create its own issues. You can't really use a flash gun because obviously that will just spook every horse running, and you know, that would create very serious safety issues. The thing you could do is that you could go to NASA or someone and say, right, we need a camera that operates in the dark at such and such a distance. Can you do it? And they would say, yes, we can. It costs this. But then we're talking about a sport that is struggling for cash. Trainers are going out of business. Owners are leaving in their droves. Staff are underpaid. And then we're going to spend a huge amount of money on a camera that we need to use once every 5 years. There was lots of carping in the aftermath of this. The same old characters come out on Twitter. They're like Only Me from the Harry Enfield programme, for those of you who remember that. But I don't like it when pundits say it's one of those things. Yes, it can be solved, but it can be solved at huge expense. And I would argue that that money ought to go somewhere else. I was also discussing this with Marcus Townend, and Marcus pointed out he's very much a sporting polymath, as it were. He said that every Saturday, football raises loads of controversy with VAR. In cricket, often or sometimes, you can't even tell whether a batsman has hit the ball when it's been caught behind the stumps. And so These are merely things that just can't be solved by technology. Not everything can, unless you go out and spend money that you haven't got.
A darkness was also an issue with a 350 at Fontwell yesterday, where Dharma Rain, seventh past the post, was given the race as the other runners were disqualified. Dharma Rain was ridden by Jack Tudor, who I spoke to earlier this morning, and started by asking him exactly what he saw as he approached that third last flight.
It was all a bit of a blur, really. There were chevrons that looked like they could well have been in the hurdle when we were, between four out and three out. But actually, when we got 10 strides, or probably more away, when everyone, all the other jockeys made the decision, I was dropped in, so I had probably a few more seconds to think about it, and decided that actually we were jumping the hurdle as the chevrons were behind the hurdle, not actually in the top of it.
Were you worried, Jack, when you had jumped it, that you'd made the wrong decision? Because, to be quite honest, it's quite a brave thing to do, a young lad like yourself, to go against the grain. I mean, were it the wrong thing to do, you'd have looked pretty silly, ultimately.
No, I was pretty confident that it was the right thing to do. It was just kind of, nursing it home then, and getting home was the next challenge. But I was pretty confident that what I had done was the correct thing.
Jack, what was the sort of feeling in the weighing room immediately after the race?
It was all a bit quiet and a bit tense, really. And I think the other jockeys, were probably thinking the worst. But obviously a ban for taking the wrong course, which actually, luckily, when we went in the stewards' room, and we were probably in there for the best part of 45 minutes, an hour, that it turned out that they got away without any days and without fines, which was, which was a brilliant result.
Do you feel, or how do you feel, the situation could have been handled better as you approached that third last flight?
There was many things were done wrong. The person who was waving the flag is supposed to be in front of the chevrons. He was actually behind them. There was no whistle blown, which in the right manner it should have been. And the chevrons were constantly moving as we were approaching the hurdle, so I think it could have been handled a lot better than what it was.
How do you feel? Obviously, these instances aren't regular occurrences, but how do you feel things might change going forward? Is there any sort of modernisation you feel could happen, or anything that's not as simple as people blowing whistles, waving flags and moving chevrons, etc.?
I'm not too sure, Sash. I think the training will be a lot more strict, or it should be a lot more strict. After that, I think the person should have training, every other meeting, perhaps, because it's obviously it's a procedure where you've got to think on your toes, and it very rarely happens, so it's out of the blue.
Was it quite dark at the time? Did that not help?
Yeah, it was very dark. Yeah, the conditions obviously weren't great either. There was plenty of kickback, which didn't help. And a lot of jockeys had pulled down their second or third goggles by that point, and it was very dark.
Listen, I appreciate you coming on what's a busy morning. And well done for winning the race, ultimately. You won't win many races on a horse going like that in future, I'm sure, but well done for winning it.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your time.
Jack pointing out there that there were many things at play. I suppose just to address the common sense issue, Dave, that we've often had with situations like this, it appears the stewards have applied that in not fining or banning the seven riders who were disqualified.
The first thing to say with relation to the lack of bans, Tom, is that the stewards had very much, I would say, front and centre in their minds, the issue of the Sandown 7 from the London National at Sandown last December. For those of us who were there, it looked like an open and shut case. We thought that it would take the combined skills of Rumpole, of the Bailey and the late George Carman to get them off. But Rory McNeice did get them off, and there were some star performances in the witness box by a couple of jockeys, and the riders walked free. Now, if McNeice could get those jockeys off, what happened yesterday would have been an absolute piece of cake for him. So those who were present at Fontwell Park thought, if we give these jockeys bans, they're going to appeal and we'll just have another PR embarrassment like we had before. So they decided to let them all off.
I agree with the open and shut case nature of Sandown in the aftermath of the event, although it didn't transpire to be as such. But I felt that the same issues were still at play which caused the event. The issues of dated practice going into trying to implement these rules, which were then present again at Fontwell, though they really weren't executed correctly at all at Fontwell. But I feel that these incidents are going to happen again if we keep using these somewhat dated practices, whistleblowing, flag waving, men carrying chevrons across a dark track, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it's first of all, it's easy to be critical of the people who were on duty at Fontwell Park and at Sandown. And I would draw here a parallel, if I could, between what we do for a living. You are a broadcaster and you do some writing. I'm a journalist who does a bit of broadcasting. Now, we both know that when you say something, you can't recall it. When you write something, you can, because you just delete it on your laptop. Now, the race day officials are very much in the broadcaster's camp. They don't have much time to think. If a horse is stricken, they've got to get everything in place with... I think they've got about half a circuit to decide what to do and to implement that. That's not very much time. And in that sense, they have my sympathy because, again, those who come out and say, oh, what's going on here? Couldn't they organise a booze up in a brewery? Well, they've got time to reflect on that. The race day officials don't. Personally, yesterday, and again, with the benefit of reflection and the benefit of hindsight, I would have put the arrows and the flag in front of that hurdle. I know that there was quite a distance between the obstacle and the stricken horse, but in the darkness and with the way that the trompe d'oeil effect, if I may, of telescoping what's in front of them, the jockeys couldn't really see clearly. I would have, belt and braces, I would have put the official and the arrows in front of that hurdle. But I think it's a very difficult thing for race day staff to pull off. We saw that at Sandown. And yes, you're right about the procedures. They are antiquated. And after Sandown, I remember doing a piece with Nick Rust in the Mirror, the BHA chief executive, and he was talking about looking everywhere, particularly France, where they used klaxons and lights, and that these were going to be implemented. Now, of course, in the interim, from February, March onwards until now, we've had COVID-19, which has been at the centre of policy for horse racing. So maybe when the sun does come out again, we can revisit those. Although, once again, the klaxons and the lights, they can communicate to riders, stop riding, the race is stopped. How they communicate to them, right, jump this hurdle, jump this hurdle, then there's a stricken horse, go round that and jump the next hurdle, I really don't know. So I can see why people complain. Yes, it shows racing in a bit of a dad's army light, but at the same time, this is a sport like no other, particularly when it's run in darkness in midwinter where we are now. These things are going to happen. We're grateful, I suppose, that they just don't happen very often, gladly.
You don't need klaxons and lights, Dave, to point the way back to the weighing room after a race, nor should you. However, with COVID protocols in place at Taunton and changes to the route back to the weighing room, it saw young Alexander Thorne, who won his race on Twin Star, eventually disqualified for not weighing in. He went the wrong route after his ITV interview. What's your take on that?
I had a chat with Noel Williams after this race on Thursday, and I thought he was extremely measured, considering it must have been something of a kick in the groin for the stable and certainly for the jockey. Where the geography has changed on race courses, I think it's incumbent on the BHA or the race course to point that out. We don't want to set traps for jockeys. Nobody wins in this. The punters lose. Yes, Nigel Twiston-Davies got the race with the second horse, but, you know, Nigel wouldn't want to win races like that anyway. He wins enough of them using fair means. What you do, you get, when we drive into the race course, there are plenty of people in high-vis tabards who say, park there, sir, you can't park there. There's the testing centre. And so you take one of those people who are there before racing, obviously fewer people come into the race course after racing has started, so they can spare one member of staff. That person stands on the door of the changing room and says, have you weighed in? Have you weighed in? Have you weighed in? Have you weighed in? Like a parrot. And all the jockeys, those perhaps the winner who's had the train of thought broken by an impromptu interview, either with ITV or with Racing TV, that person can, the jockey can regather their thoughts and go and weigh in. If you don't want to do it with a person, you could even get in the shops in Peckham near where I live, they often have life-size cardboard cutouts of police constables. That's to deter anyone thinking of stealing anything from doing so. You could even put one of those outside the door of the changing room with a little sign saying, please weigh in, and an arrow. It's really easy to fix this. It doesn't happen very often. It's embarrassing when it does, but it can be solved in a single stroke.
The weekend was highlighted by Robbie Power's excellent double on a Sunday, and he's enjoying, I think, his time of it over in the UK. And that is the first question that I put to him when I spoke to him a little bit earlier on.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it was. You come over for these big weekends, and just say, Tizard's have a fantastic team of horses. And then I was hoping, it was never guaranteed, and it's still not guaranteed, but I was hoping that when Irish trainers would come over, that they'd use me, because I'm over there, and I've ridden winners for most of them anyway. So, look, the weekend was great. Ride a winner for Gordon Emmett, rolled one for Jesse as well, and a couple for Paul Nolan. So, it's great that the Irish trainers are using me when they come over.
Just sort of go horse by horse if we can and reflect on the big breakaway. He can jump a fence, can't he?
Yeah, he can. His schooling at home had been fantastic before he ran, and we were really looking forward to getting him started. And it was a very good performance. He did what he was expected to do, and he can do it both ways, you know, long, short. It doesn't seem to matter to him. And I couldn't have been happier with him for his first start over fences. That went almost perfectly, and you could be critical, say he jumped a little bit big at times, but I still think he's a big baby. He only had 3 runs last season over hurdles, so I think he still has a lot to learn.
When they jump big like that, I mean, I think some of us like to see it because it shows the scope they've got for a fence, etc. Would you, as the rider, rather they were a bit neater and lower and tidier over them first up?
I would. First time up, I don't mind the horse being a bit big, you know, that's a good sign. They show respect, and it shows they have the scope to do it. So being first time up, being a bit big, that doesn't bother me at all. If it was a bit low, I'd be more worried. But it was a good performance. And as the race went on, 3 out, 2 out, and the last, he was very, very good. So I think he'll have learned a good bit from yesterday. And as I said, he's still a big baby, so hopefully he's a lot more to learn.
And as far as your novice chase double went, over shorter El Dorado, Alan was good. Would you have won, do you think?
I hadn't gone for everything. I was just going through the motions. I had Dickie in my sights. He's gone for a jump at the second last, and his horse is put down, and maybe he wasn't holding on to as much as he thought. I don't know. Only Dickie knows how well he was going. But my horse would have stayed galloping, you know. The way he went down and jumped the last proves to me that he still had plenty left in the tank. So it would have been a close call, but I still thought he had plenty of horses underneath me, and he would have definitely galloped all the way up the hill.
Is he going to leave his hurdle form a long way behind, you think, now he's over a fence?
I think he will. Again, his schooling at home had been very good before he ran, and he learned an awful lot from that run in Newton Abbott. He made a bad mistake at the last in Newton Abbott, and I think it showed on Saturday how much he learned from that. Going forward, he's a very nice 2 mile novice chaser, especially on soft ground. He handles soft ground really well, so I think the plan is to go to the Henry VIII in Sandown, where he's won around, he won over hurdles in Sandown before as well, so that would more than likely be good in soft ground, so that should suit him ideally.
And, of course, you won the great with the shunter for Emmett Mullins. I mean, you rode him pretty quietly and produced him at the perfect time. He won pretty easy, didn't he?
Yeah, he won going away in the end. For a minute coming down the hill, I was flat to the boards. You know, he just, as Emmett said to me, he's probably more of a 2.5 miler, but with the rain that fell and it made it into a test of stamina, I was a bit concerned between 3 out and 2 out, but I had to sit and suffer because he couldn't go with them. But when he jumped the second last really well, then he really started to stay on, and I knew once I got a gap straight enough for the last that he'd win. You know, his stamina kicked into play up the hill, and he got all the way to the line.
And of course, you got that sit on Tiger Roll, which must have been great for you. I know it didn't work out, but he just wasn't giving you the right feel, no?
No, he wasn't. You know, Keith, I had a good chat with Keith Donahue about the horse before the race because he knows him inside out. And Keith had said to me that he probably won't travel for the first mile or mile and a half of the race, but then he'll jump a fence and latch onto the bridle. And I was going along waiting for him. I said, you better latch onto the bridle soon. And he didn't. And when I gave him a squeeze, he still didn't jump into the bridle. So he just never felt what, what I was expecting to feel. And I thought the best thing to do was to pull him up.
You're enjoying your time over here. I guess it comes with its difficulties, right? You know, you're over in the UK permanently now and travel between the UK and Ireland. You can't exactly do it every weekend. So it's been a good weekend, but it comes with its struggles, does it, for you?
Yeah, of course it does. You know, the weekend before I was in Fos Glas watching the Tri-Town meeting in Navan, which was a big meeting, and it has its ups and downs last weekend, but this weekend gone was a fantastic weekend.
Well done again. Thanks, Robbie.
No problem, Tom. Thanks for you.
Dave, Robbie Powers has taken something of a risk coming over and basing himself over here, given what's going on. But, well, it's only a risk to an extent because, of course, he's got the support of a powerful yard like Colin Tizard.
Yeah, it's working out very well so far, isn't it? I thought that El Dorado Allen, I wasn't sure whether he would have won that race had Gumball stayed up. I tipped him, so I was glad that he did win it. But I think both jockey and trainer Colin Tizard were undecided as to what the outcome would have been. The big breakaway, he was entitled to win that on his hurdling form, but I thought that was a really promising start. Obviously, both horses housed in the Tizard camp, and that's good news for them because they've got Lost in Translation at Haydock on Saturday, and so they want the yard to be in top form, which they certainly seem to be now.
Did you have a performance of the weekend, of the 3 days at Cheltenham as such, or did nothing really grab you and make you sit up excitedly?
I thought that a lot of the quotes that we were getting for the Cheltenham Festival in March, and I'm happy to have my nose rubbed in this comment in 4 months' time, but I just thought a few of them, I just thought they were premature. You know, the ground was soft. We've got a lot of water to flow under the bridge. You know, Duffel Coat, Robbie said after that horse had won on Saturday, you know, there'll be classier horses coming out, but there won't be many horses with more street wisdom or a tough attitude than this horse. And I think both those statements are true, but the former one is probably the telling one. Put the Kettle On, certainly interesting, because she's 3 from 3 at Cheltenham now. And whilst I don't think she won that race particularly impressively, because I thought that Duc de Genièvre got the wobbles and she was able to capitalise on that, I thought both Put the Kettle On and Defi de Seuil looked in trouble jumping two out. But she's 3 from 3 at the track now, and certainly the market for the Champion Chase, Tom, is open, isn't it? You know, there isn't a despot sitting at the top of the betting like Altior was to say, well, you know, we're going to be racing for second and third place. Chacun Pour Soi is the favourite, who still has a bit to prove in many people's minds. Of course, didn't run at Cheltenham in March. Altior is as big as 8-1 to get back his crown. And then we're looking at Put the Kettle On and Rouge Vif, who of course didn't run in the Schlur Chase. So the stage is there to be occupied by a star, isn't it? And Put the Kettle On, well, as I say, I didn't think she was wildly impressive, but her record at the track is perfect. And it's hard to think that she won't have a role to play of some kind in the Champion Chase in March.
And be it the fact that she's a mare or the fact that she is named Put the Kettle On, her battling qualities that she showed on Sunday afternoon, whatever it is, she is now an incredibly popular mare as well. And that's the first question I put to her trainer, Henry de Bromhead, when I spoke to him a little bit earlier.
Ah, yeah, well, it's great. You know, that's great. You know, this great crew owner, Mary Darmody being the matriarch of it. Yeah, look, they're brilliant. And it's great to see she cost 20 grand at the Land Rover sale. You know, like with what National Hunt horses are making nowadays, it's great to see that you can still have, the smaller syndicates can still have a chance of these great horses. She was brilliant. She and Aiden were brilliant. Yeah, look, it looked really tough. They obviously went a pretty strong gallop, and yeah, just loved the way she toughed it out. You know, she's an amazing mare. In fairness to her, she seems to love it over there, and she really had to show how tough she was yesterday.
What is it about the track that seems to really play to her strengths, Henry?
She's got a bit of pace, so probably I would have said that up until yesterday, but she looked lost going around there for the first, you know, for three quarters of the race. And I'd also said her jumping, you know, you have to be so quick around there on that old course. But do you want to go once more? Yeah. So yesterday, those kind of attributes seemed to disappear. So it was just toughness yesterday. I think she really struggled on the ground. Aidan said it was a lot tackier than, and it was old ground, you know, and it was a lot tackier than last year, and or in the Arkle. So she just seemed to struggle on it, but it was great to see her tough it out so much.
Has she surprised you, Henry? Would you have thought 12 months ago that now you'd be sitting here campaigning her as a champion chaser?
12 months ago, it would have been just after she won that Arkle trial. So, possibly. 13 months ago, no, definitely not. You know, we went to the Arkle trial. The guys, she had some lovely runs through the summer, won some nice rated novice chases, etc. And the guys... her owners would go, John Darmody and Keith and a few of them would go to Cheltenham in November. So we just said we'd go and take our chance. But then when she won that, obviously, you know, that was a big step up for her. After that, yeah, you know, we said we'd have again take our chance and have a go at the Arkle. Yeah, probably weren't thinking champion chase 2021 at the time. But yeah, look, it's brilliant. And it's great to see her progress like she is.
Henry, you must have been delighted with Jason the Militant yesterday. He rallied as well in that grade one hurdle. Your reflection on that?
Yeah, ran a blinder. Yeah, I haven't actually had a chance to see it again, so I've only really seen it live. But I sort of turned away, turning in, you know, decided, you know, felt we were beaten. And then next thing, he really rallied, like you say, and stayed on well. Yeah, delighted with him. Great run. And yeah, you know, it's a shame when you're only beaten that far, not to win, but super run.
Is it an oversimplistic view that he wants further?
I don't think it is, no. I'd say I was discussing it with his owner, Peter Michael, yesterday. He's adamant he'll get further. And, yeah, so we were starting to look along those lines, see what was coming up that might suit him. Now, also a stronger gallop, I'd say, could suit him over too as well, you know, in a stronger run race, possibly. You know, we'll see.
Well, Dave, last time I was hosting this fine podcast with your fine self, it was winner Monday with Dragons Will Rise. Can you raise another winner from the fires for us?
I hope so. It's in the 8 o'clock at Kempton Park, Tom, and it's number 2 Vape. This horse hasn't yet won a race, but was edged out by half a length over 7 at Wolverhampton last time. The way that he ran suggested that coming back to 6 was the right move. He'll try and make all, I suspect, and stall 1 would be the right place to start from. He's got stall 1. Tom Marcond does the steering on Tony Carroll's Son of Dark Angel. So I hope that today's the day. 8 o'clock race at Kempton Park. Select number 2, Vape.
Dave, a pleasure as always, and a pleasure to host this podcast as always. Nick Luck is in Bahrain this week. He will be back throughout the week, building up to the Bahrain International Trophy this Friday afternoon. Thank you for listening at home. Don't forget, if you've enjoyed it, to rate, review and subscribe. Bye-bye for now.
You've been listening to Nick Luck Daily, brought to you in association with FitzDares, the Racehorse Owners Association, and thoroughbred racing commentary.